This episode is dedicated to the memory of Steve Irwin, a man's man, a true environmentalist, and one of the best friends nature ever had. Thank you for all that you did while you were here. Your spirit lives on in Pandora.
Welcome to the world of Pandora. Life here is one with what you call nature, what we call Awa. Here you are free to be whomever and whatever you want, as long as it is in harmony with the world around you. This world is beautiful but harsh, and everyone and everything needs to eat. So in order to thrive on Pandora, you must find your place in the world and the tribe you choose to be a part of. Rely on others as you provide value and service to your new family, your smookon and smooket, brothers and sisters, and your home. Here on Pandora, Awa is always with you if you know how to listen and observe. Awa rewards the bold and the strong, but also the wise. So L2C, use your brain as well as your arm. Pay attention to your surroundings. Breathe deep the essence of the forest, the plains, the oceans, rivers, and streams. Feel the flow of energy all around you. Become one with the magic all around you, and you will never truly die. Grow and learn. Tap into the lines of power all around you by bonding with the trees and animals you share this world with, not distancing yourself like some human. Feel the power of Awa flow through you, and you will become mighty. For with Awa, all things on Pandora are possible. The secret is simply to exist in and of Awa, not as a ketuwong. Stretch your senses and breathe in Awa, and breathe out Sa-Tute.
All right, so Avatar versus Titanic.
And I know what was going to happen before we saw the movie. It's like, okay, Titanic, what happens? Oh, I don't know. Could it sink?
Let's see, I'm going to buy a ticket and get depressed because I know I'm just going to sit here for 3 hours and watch a boat sink and everybody dies.
Not everybody. Like three people made it out.
Oh, yay.
The rich people. The people who founded the RDA.
The people who could buy their way out.
Avatar, for me, was a pleasant surprise. I was not expecting the awesomeness.
Yeah,
Titanic
me too.
Titanic was a huge disappointment. I thought it was going to be about the boat and the sinking, not a love story that just
drags
kind of
on.
Oh, Leo.
Is the actual movie.
Oh. Movies had moments where I was watching and people were dying, and it's like, oh, that's a sucky way to go.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Pretty epic deaths.
It's like, ah.
I'm sorry. For me, Rose is just a whiny little bitch. Oh, she's so pathetic. I'm going to go kill myself. I'm going to jump off the back of a boat.
Oh, my privileged life is so horrible.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well,
Leo DiCaprio, I'm on a boat.
I have to say, I was a teenage girl when Titanic came out. So I was all over the Leo. I was all over the Leonardo DiCaprio. But there is one thing. Like, I felt like as much as I love the Horner, the Titanic theme song reached epic proportions that ICU just did not.
Yeah, the song that you never want to hear because it's played everywhere. All the time.
Near, far, wherever you are, I believe that the heart does go on.
Okay, girls,
okay,
so
sorry,
Jack or Jake?
Yes.
Jake.
Yeah, I have to say Jake.
Jake's so dreamy.
Jake in Navi form.
Yeah, and you know, that is going for
Well, he is 10 feet tall with 0% body.
And a tail. Though.
And next to nothing.
Have I said too much?
Best death scene. colonel or that guy that fell into the propeller.
Oh. Roar! Roar! I'm gonna beat you with my bow! Oh! And then he fell down. Oh, okay, I guess so.
Well, we haven't seen his death scene.
I don't think he's dead. Thing in the script. Have you guys heard about that?
Yeah.
I've heard rumors also.
Okay. Okay.
I heard rumors, but okay. It's not in the movie. It didn't happen. Okay. Unless it happened in the movie.
Okay.
Iceberg versus Home Tree.
You know. Home Tree.
I think Iceberg wins. No, dude. The iceberg totally. Iceberg won, Titanic zero. And in this case, Home Tree was zero.
Yeah.
Dragon Ship won.
Huge fleet. Dragon Ship won, yeah. Unfortunately, that one goes to the iceberg.
James Cameron did Aliens, and we're the good guys, and now Avatar, we're the bad guys. Well, in Titanic, nature wins, iceberg wins. In Avatar, home tree, technology wins, home tree dies.
Oh.
Home Tree lost the battle, but Awa won the war.
Hello, my name is Aaron, and I go by Aaron E. Bergman on the LearnNavi forums, keeping life simple. Apart from Avatar, my main hobbies are historical reenactment with the SCA and playing video games. Well, I hope everyone enjoys the podcast.
Yo-ho, yo-ho, brush, let's all add our voice, whichever you've the notion.
50 cents for shaving cream, a dollar for the lotion.
Radio Avatar
means quality, said the captain to the bosun. So look for the package with the ship that sails the ocean. Yo-ho, yo-ho.
Kaltit mafrapo. Hello, my listeners, and welcome to another episode of Culture Corner. Today we're going to talk about the Navi concept of ownership and discuss a little bit about their leadership. Now, this is something we still don't have a clear concept of, but we are given a number of clues that can help us out. And, as always, what I'm talking about only pertains to the Omaticaya, the tribe we see in the movie, rather than Navi as a whole. So, the Omaticaya are clearly a communal group and seem to be a cross between a band and tribal society. These are anthropological terms that refer to a number of things, but for this discussion we'll simplify it a lot and say that they define a society's population and general leadership style. Bands and tribes have the smallest population and the loosest form of government. In these, we get something called a big man, which are loose leaders that get their positions through merit rather than being born into it. The leaders of the Omaticaya seem to have a lot more control than the normal big man, but all signs point to them being chosen in a similar manner. And that is about as short as that discussion can be. Let's move on to ownership. The Omaticaya do have an idea of personal property, though they go about it a bit differently than in Western society. They have something called a personal rack, where they can hang their personal possessions. This isn't something that the individual Navi can make, though, but rather must be a gift given to them by a friend or family member. These racks take a long time to make, and the effort put into them is a means to strengthen the bond between the giver and receiver. This also shows that while they do have a concept of ownership, for the individual, it is only through the will of the group, and it is a right that you must earn. Well, that's about as short as I can make that conversation. And it's only a taste of what discussions we have going on over at the Culture Board at learnnavi.org. So drop by if this got you curious and you want to learn more. Bye.
For
Radio Avatar
contains no stimulant of any kind that could possibly cause sleeplessness, nervousness, or indigestion.
One of my favorite quotes comes from Lao Tzu, who tells us that nature is not human-hearted. As quasi-intelligent life forms, we like to create constructs of good and evil to organize and shape our society. These are necessary products of any advanced civilization, as we choose to define what is right versus what is wrong. The word civilization has a root commonality with the word civility, which means pretty much to be considerate of other people. But in nature, the rules of right and wrong are inconceivable. There's only the rule of survival. To the zebra, the lion is the great Satan, the adversary who brings pain and death, and therefore evil. But to the lion, the zebra is merely lunch. So how is it with Ewa? When humans land on Pandora and start carving up unobtainium and the plants and trees that we currently think act as neural synapses, we're essentially pulling out large chunks of her brain matter and central nervous system. Wouldn't it be simple self-preservation to get rid of a parasite or a cancer one is afflicted with? Isn't this what intelligent life forms do every day biologically? When a parasite or a cancer invades your body, your brain sends out antibodies to destroy the invader. Why would Ewa be any different? How is her sending banshees and hellfire wasps and viper wolves and titanotheres and whatnot after humans any different than your body removing a toxin? Now, I personally like the romantic ideal of Ewa riding in to save the Na'vi at the end of the movie, but what if in reality she was just ridding herself of a pest? Neytiri tells Jake in the movie that Ewa protects the balance of life, but what if that balance is what she needs to exist, to function and gather more information, which is what brains like to do? Just ask any scientist. None of this demeans Ewa in any way, but what would happen if our world suddenly decided that she'd had enough of us destroying her and made our environment inhospitable to human existence? What if Gaia woke up one day and said, "Screw this," and kicked humans off the planet? Could we blame our parents and previous generations for this? Or is it tantamount to sacrilege to hold people accountable for their destructive ways, as long as we're related to them? So, Ewa, benevolent entity or selfish bitch? I mean, it's all nice at the end of the movie. Neytiri's like, "Ewa's heard you, Ewa's heard you." And she gets all spastic and she's happy. But
yeah. And her eyes get all big.
Yeah, like they weren't that already.
Yeah.
But
true.
You know, and I know she's all happy and everything, but the real question is, she's got a whole planet to run. And were these humans just like fleas scratching a dog, and finally the dog wakes up and goes, "Scratch, scratch, get off
yes.
me."
I'm going to vote for selfish bitch, but with a right. She has a right to be a selfish bitch about people coming in and just destroying her.
Well, I'm wondering, is Neytiri seems to think that Ewa protected her Na'vi, but in reality, you know, every time they cut a huge section of forest down and they just slashed and burned the trees and scooped out unobtainium, it's like they're pulling out her nerve cells or her neurons. And the point is that from what we think we know, Grace says that Ewa is a connection or network based on a connection of trees and plants and animals and environment. So every time you dig up a tree, it's like you're pulling a small nerve cell out. So she was slowly being carved up.
It's a big brain.
Yeah, it's a planet-sized brain. And obviously, if someone walks up and starts punching you in the nose, you're going to get pretty angry. So you've got a planet-sized brain.
Yeah, it's like, "Ouch, that really hurt. Quit that. That's not very nice."
In my opinion, Ewa is going, okay, for the first few years, it's like, okay, this is bugging me, but I'm just going to ignore it. They're just scratching me, okay? And then it's like, okay, burning, scratching, burning. Ow, this really hurts now. You're bugging the crap out of me.
No, absolutely.
What was it that Neytiri said to Jake when they're standing the day before the battle, and Jake is like, "I'm talking to a tree. I am so manly. I'm a gruff marine." No, and she's...
Oh, yeah, she says our great mother doesn't...
Yeah, she doesn't take sides. She keeps the balance.
Yeah, she just
right?
balance.
So, and then the next day she comes and it's like, "Ewa has heard you." And she's all happy because she sent her the Thanator, right? The Palalukan. So, what message are we supposed to take from that? Like, since short of walking up to James Cameron and being like, was it just that you couldn't make up your mind, or are you appealing to like our idea of the Earth Mother, or like, because we have both sides of the coin here. Like, does she choose sides or not, or like, or are we supposed to take that line to mean she's not choosing sides, but it's the humans that have greatly disturbed the balance, and she's just putting the balance back. I guess
think of it like a
moment, I'm arguing,
right?
With myself.
Like
James Cameron is trying to have both things at once, like a deity that is not, that does not have an agenda, but at the same time she does have an agenda. So it's like, well,
I see it more of as like the mother, like she's not going to pick sides between her children, like this Na'vi clan versus that Na'vi clan. But when some other kid's picking on her children, she's going to whoop on that.
Hey, that's a good point. That's interesting. Yeah.
I want to bring up a point here. The Buddha said that only Buddha knows Buddha. Now, what I'm getting at is at the point, he was at the time, he was admonishing the scholars of his time that all of their study and learning and wisdom would only get them so far. But to really understand Buddha, or in this case, to really understand Ewa, you had to be there. You had to be Na'vi. You had to experience it. And a lot of the problem with Grace and the reason why she could never become Na'vi,
even though she wanted to so much, like those monks.
Oh, she wanted to so bad. And you saw that little tear in her eye when Jake gets accepted. She's like, oh, you know, she's really happy for him at the same time. But she was so objective. And we talked about this, and I want to talk about this more, obviously.
This reminds us of our last conversation.
Well, and also, in a discussion that we're going to have in a little bit about the main scene, one of the things that I want to bring up, just to foreshadow a bit, is Neytiri is shown throughout the movie to be wrong. You're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. Ooh, look, here's a human, or in this case, here's a an avatar driver, whatever they call him in Na'vi. Some scholar I am. Oh, look, I'm going to shoot him. Ewa says no.
Niltarantok.
Jake fights off the doggies, and she helps. That's really cool. And he says, hey, I want to go learn about Ewa. And she's like, no. And Ewa says, what? No. Hey, he can come learn about me. And she's like...
Yeah, so Ewa does have an agenda. An agenda to tell us a good story.
Jake is standing there talking to the tree, going, I'm probably just talking to a tree, but I'm trying. And Ewa smacks him upside the head and says, the Great Mother doesn't pay attention. You just stop talking to that tree. And Ewa says, no. So I think, in a sense, you bring up an excellent point, but I also want to bring up that Neytiri is constantly wrong. And if she's going to be the next Sahik, Moet's got a lot of teaching to do. It's like, daughter.
Well, keep in mind, she's still almost a child. She's only like 19 years old, right? Assuming that, I mean, who knows how long a Pandora year, but we're supposed to understand that she's still young. And like any good story, it's a coming of age story. So I think we like to see her make all the mistakes she can while she's still young. And then, you know, then we'll watch her grow into a graceful and adult. Yeah. I look with optimism toward her turn
now,
as Sahi.
There was something in the ending battle. They still had the... it seems very convenient that someone who claimed to be the person who keeps the balance waited until all the Na'vi seemed to be destroyed.
Yeah.
And then, there was a lot of them gone, and then she came in and attacked. It could have been keeping balance in some weird... Yeah.
Well, she might not have been taking that threat seriously until she felt all of her Ikran dying, all of her horses and Na'vi dying, because it was pretty one-sided up until the point. Granted, they did a lot of damage, but if Ewa could send Titanotheres and Viper Wolves and Ikran
and rocks,
banshees, and rocks and trees and whatnot, and lightning and thunder and bears and lions. And
oh my!
She probably felt those losses, but at the same time, you know, when you're as big as a planet, you know, like, well, is this really an issue? Is this really an issue? And maybe at the end, she was just like, okay, fine.
I just envisioned her as a CEO. Sitting at her desk. Oh, this little listening over here and counting.
She was created by Americans. And so you have the very American, like, American Christian saying, God helps those who help themselves. So
Lord loves the
So it's kind of like Ewa helps those that also fight. So I mean, that's probably, we could explain away that, like, how come she didn't, you know, just
if they sat back and did nothing
to repel the humans. Yeah.
If they'd sat back and done nothing, so, it would have been like, oh,
as part of a
you.
Storytelling device. Yeah. we see her and that sort of empowers the Na'vi in a way, which is another very American ideal, like, oh, you have power and
God is looking out for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is from an AWA point of view. This is a very localized infection, but from the human or even Na'vi point of view, it really is individualistic. This is my tribe. This is happening to. You know, we have to actually go out and ask our neighbors. Hey, we're getting butchered here. You know, can you help us? Our house got destroyed.
But AWA can't do it alone because she's not comprised. Like she's not a. You know, we don't know if she has agency or not, right? Exactly. She's made up. She's the internet. She's not like an invisible hand in the sky. She's the internet, or she's all of the little interconnected things.
Technically, she called all the animals to come fight.
Right.
It seems like, unlike the Borg, she doesn't control or force the Na'vis to go do this and that.
Most of the time, she seems
to let the animals and plants do their thing. And again, that's when she's protecting the balance. What if she's just protecting her balance?
The Na'vi are their birth and death is kept in check.
Yeah, they have a relatively.
Their numbers are perfectly in equilibrium with.
Right, so that they don't overpopulate and end up taking over the world.
That's in the ASG.
Yes. Well, we're going to have to table this discussion and definitely come back to it over and over again until we just can't talk anymore, because this is really deep stuff. All right, thanks, everybody.
Tonight on 2½ Na'vi.
Jake, are you ready for your taught on you lessons today?
Dad, I don't need to become taught on you.
What do you mean, Jake? How on Pandora do you expect to make anything of yourself if you don't practice?
I can just be like Uncle Charlie. He never became taught on you, and his life is pretty good.
You hear that, Alan? My life is pretty good.
Oh, don't even get me started with you, mister. Just because you'll make Tsahelu with anything that has a pulse doesn't mean you're a good example for my son.
Alan, that's not fair.
Oh, really? Let's see, just in the past month, you've been with Peral, Peral's younger sister, Ninat.
In my defense, Alan, Ninat is the best singer.
Charlie, that's not the point.
Yes, it is, Alan. You spend all day inside Kelitril weaving pants when I'm outside enjoying the wildlife. You need to get out more, Alan. It's time to let the old Ikon fly.
My Ikon is none of your business.
Whatever you say, Taranyu. We can all hear you in the forest at night, you know. And I've got to tell you, yelling shut up and fly straight doesn't always work like you'd think.
I get it. Fly straight.
Tune in tonight at Vamoon, Vola Central, for an all-new episode of 2½ Na'vi.
Okay, now so we're recording. So, what's that funky music? Oh, yeah. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Welcome to another exciting episode of Ian's Not Here at the Moment, so we're going to butcher the Na'vi language. Take it away, guest teacher.
Yay. Okay, so this is the Na'vi language segment that we already covered. So last time we were doing this, we learned some of...
Kaltimafrapo!
Exactly. We learned hello and good and thank you. So now we can learn the other sides of those. First one is Kiavame, which means goodbye, and literally it means see you soon.
One of the first words my little son learned in a foreign language.
Kiavame.
Good. It has the accented I at the beginning, so it's the ki. And then if you would like to ask for something politely instead of just saying, give me that, you can As for using root e, which has that adjective t that we learned about last time also. So it means please. So root e. And you actually can hear this in the movie at one point when the Na'vi are getting ready to go to war and Grace tells them to listen, please. She says it extremely loudly. So if you want to go hear it in actual movie form, there it is.
And a bit before that, you can hear it when Neytiri and Jake are on the tree branch and she wants to stop him from hitting the Atacarina.
That's right.
Oh, really? Does she say that? I never noticed that.
That's true.
Cool. So what's the difference between Kiavame and Ewa Nyahu?
Ewa Nahu. They're both, well, Ewa Nahu is, literally means Ewa, be with you. Or so that Kiavame is like, see you soon, and Ewa is kind of a more spiritual type of greeting or ungreeting, goodbye. So Ewa Nahu.
So if I'm running down to the local tree store to buy something, I just say Kiavame. But if I'm leaving to, like, on a grand adventure, they should say Ewa Nahu, and out of respect for my greatness.
That would be a more fitting, yeah, Ewa Nahu is kind of more, I hope that you do well while you're gone, and Kiavame is just like, I hope I get to see you again.
Later, dude. Yeah, it's Na'vi. I brought that up in the first episode. Cool. Oh, we don't have a word for dude yet, do we?
We don't need a word for dude.
Oh, we totally do. Look, I'm telling you, somewhere out there are blonde Na'vis, and they live by the sea, and they're like, Kiavame, dude, and they will show up in Avatar 3.
Okay.
I declare it so. Okay, but you do know that there are Eskimo Na'vis.
I wonder, though.
What was that, Judy?
I always wonder, like, because, you know, our world is as big as Pandora, and look at all of the great multitudes of languages we have. Like, what if Na'vi isn't even, like, one of the biggest languages on Pandora?
Oh, goodness. I don't have to learn another one.
Wait. There's a language?
Oh, yeah, we go there, we land speaking Na'vi, and they're like, dude, you guys must be from the other side of
the
planet.
They're like, dude, we only use Na'vi to, like, as a, you know, like how we use Navajo so that during World War II?
Only tourists speak Na'vi, duh. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, off topic. But I am worried about our A's. Like, I keep making this mistake myself. Like, I keep saying Kiavame, but isn't it Kiavame, like, more of an E sound and not an A sound? And same with root E. It's more root E and not root A. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Okay. That's one of the cool things. Root I love Na'vi because you always, it looks, each letter has one sound. It's not like, yeah, I mean, even true. in the word avatar, the A makes avatar. Three different sounds in that word.
Avatar.
So, I mean, so I guess the E is supposed to have kind of a sound, or?
Like an E-H, right?
Yeah.
So, as in meh. So, like, this language is meh.
It's not A, because...
What makes the A sound? Because there is an A sound.
E-Y. Like, E-Y.
It's the E-Y, yes.
E-Y.
Yeah. E-Y.
A-Y is I, right?
Did I say A? I totally said A. E-Y is A.
Yeah.
And A-Y is I.
Oh.
Right?
Yes.
Oh, like, yeah, that makes sense. A-Y. E-Y-W-A. A-Y. A-Y. Wow.
So, root E. And K-Y-V-A-M-E. K-Y-V-A-M-E.
All right, so if you are asking to be sorry, if you are sorry, you can use werut olivu, which is kind of long, but it just means forgive me, or
whoa,
let there be forgiveness. Yeah, it's kind
of. Judy's really good at that. Can you want to take a stab at that? Whatever he said,
it was. Werut olivu.
Werut olivu.
Oli.
Werut olivu.
Olivu.
There you go. Yeah.
Werut olivu.
Well, you're saying where. You need to say.
Oh.
You need to clap your R thing. That's the one thing I know.
Okay. Weru toa livu. Oh, is it? Shoot. It's livu, okay, isn't it? Weru?
It's a long E. The E.
Isn't that what you just
livu.
Said?
It, okay. If you want to say, this is kind of a side note, but if you want to say anything is to someone, as long as that ends with a vowel, it you just add RU onto the end of it, and Weru. You can have that mean to Weru. Whatever. So Weru. For I, which is OA, then you have Weru instead of OA.
My head just exploded. Yeah.
Brain crash. Okay.
Let's talk about something fun. No, this is cool. We're totally butchering Navi. I love it.
I love destroying languages. It's my favorite pastime.
Yeah, remember, we need to put Frommer on the apology list again.
Yeah, again. Again. From here to eternity.
Okay, is there anything else we want to learn before we bore our listeners to death?
Well, let's see. For those Navi lovers.
Like that was cool.
We can have I love you. Aw. That's nga yao. That's nga yaone lu wer.
Wait, na, which is you. Na yaone?
Yeah, it has the that ng like they had, like we talked about last episode.
No, we got that part. Aww. We got the na. What's the other part, please?
Yaone lu wer, that means
na.
Beloved.
Na yaone lu wer.
You are to me.
Yaone lu wer.
So they don't have a word for to loved. Anything is beloved to them instead of.
So I should pretty much learn this one for all my lady friends.
Exactly.
Right? Chicka, yeah.
Although it might not do so well if you just walk up to somebody that you.
Oh, you don't got my swag. That's the problem.
Oh, you should at least be so polite to introduce yourself before you tell them, "Oh, you're my loved one."
Well, I think that's totally cool. So, yeah, Judy, tell us what we've learned. We've learned.
Nga yaone luer. Nga yaone luer. So, we've learned how to say goodbye, which is kayavame. Kayavame. Kayavame.
Oh, but also, like, permanently goodbye is like ewa nyahu. So, you have a choice.
Or ewa be nahu. With you. Ewa nahu.
And then we, and hello is kalte.
Oh, yeah. Hello is kalte. Kalte. Pli.
Cool. And then rute is.
Rute.
From San Francisco comes.
Radio Avatar.
That's the San Francisco treat.
So I was watching TV the other day, and I saw an ad for the movie Vantage Point. This is made back in 2008, and oh God, I'll probably butcher the movie, but the president gives a speech in Europe, and he gets shot, and it's like they show it from...
The movie is kind of, it's about the same 15 minutes over and over and over again, but it's from a bunch of different people's point of view. So as you go through the movie, you kind of see more pieces of this giant puzzle are being put together.
Yeah, it was an okay movie. I mean, nothing against it. It was a little forgettable, but it wasn't too bad. But in this advertisement, I thought I saw Sigourney Weaver. And I was like, really? So I trotted over my computer and hit IMDb, and sure enough, Sigourney Weaver is in it. And right below that, it said Zoe Saldana. And at that point, my head just exploded. I was like, wait.
Bah?
In 2008... Zoe and Sigourney Weaver both were in this movie. Now, does that mean that this movie was filmed right before Avatar? And I wonder if the fact that they were paired up together had any influence on James Cameron using Zoe, which would have, you know, was that a one of those Ewa moments where it's just, you know, you come over here, you come over here, and all of a sudden it just works out that that is what helped launch Zoe. Or was she already slated? So will we ever know? I don't know. Fan mail.
Think about
that. Attention, James Cameron. Email us at podcast@radioavatar.com and tell us what's going on. All right. Well, that's our 30-second update on nothing in particular.
Hello. Stevie Cron here. Today,
We're going after the elusive mountain banshee. Now, to get here, we have to climb mountains and hanging vines. And, almost lost my balance there. If I had slipped off this vine, I'd have fallen almost 2 kilometers to the forest floor. I would have been Nantang Chow for sure. We're finally here. We have just endured a 3-hour climb to get here. But there's no time to rest, as now they know I'm here, and will start to fly away. Look, there goes one now. Okay, so let's find this adventure. Hey, crikey, look at the size of this one. If he took a snap at my outstretched arm, he could chomp the whole of it clean off. Those jaws cut a hexapod in two. Lucky for me, I don't taste like chicken. All right there, fella. Yeah. Now, we are one, new friend. Let's go for a flight.
And remember, it's your planet. Take care of it and all its inhabitants.
The movie Avatar struck a resonant chord in hundreds of millions of people all over the planet. On the surface was a rather simple story of colonialism and industrial conquest. This is nothing new. These things have happened throughout history. There's always someone seeking value from someone else and often taking it by force or by coercion. But just below the surface of this movie is a vast number of undercurrents, ripples of ideologies bouncing off each other, eddies of morality, and philosophical currents carrying subplots throughout the movie. To see Avatar and only see an us versus them story is like staring at the surface of the ocean and never seeing the fish that live in it. But it seems that everyone takes something away from Avatar that is unique to their perception of the world around them. We have several thousand people trying to learn the Na'vi language, while millions will dress up in costumes and makeup this Halloween as Na'vi or RDA employees. Pagans and Christians alike are studying the Na'vi philosophy to see how their connection to their deity relates to our Earth-based systems of belief. Na'vi role-playing is on the rise, and we have at least one real-life tribe that is forming to try to emulate Na'vi culture here on Earth. The movie has sparked a renewed interest in environmentalism from people who are only marginally conscious of our disposable commodity-based economy. All of these Avatar fans are trying to connect with the magic they felt when they saw Avatar for the first time. They're expressing themselves through their personality and personal choices in life. This is like drawing a large circle on the ground and pointing to a spot in the center and saying, "In there is what it means to be Na'vi." And then all along the edge of the circle, people line up based on what they feel is the best path to the center. So what does it mean to be Na'vi? Well, if I speak French, does that make me French? Even if it doesn't, am I closer to the French culture or way of life? What if I go to Paris and study art, or intern at a perfumery, or attend a Cordon Bleu? Hell, what if I marry a French woman? Do any of these things that we do allow us to get closer to that ideal of connecting with what we like about the Na'vi? I think so. Pandora is a mythical place, like Neverland or Narnia or the world of Harry Potter. But it's also a place of inspiration, and the ideas we find in the movie are based on real-life events and locations here on Earth. We have rocks and trees and corporations and tribes. We have deep spirituality and ways to fly without hopping on a plane. But that soul-deep connection to nature that the Na'vi have, and that communal spirit seems to be at the center of the circle of what we call Na'vi. And that's the one place we can't seem to reach in modern society. The Na'vi haven't divorced themselves from the world around them. They live and die as a part of nature, not seeing it as an enemy or a disposable resource. This is more than simple environmentalism. The Na'vi can feel nature, like the fairies and spirits of nature present in every culture throughout history. They are superhuman in their ability to think and reason, but also able to bond with the world around them instead of building walls to keep it at bay. So let's open up this discussion.
Well, it's really a matter of whether you want to say someone who comes to America and has a hamburger, does that make them American? And that's just my opinion. But I think it's more about, it's not, am I a Na'vi, but is it, am I celebrating what it's like to be Na'vi? Am I trying to better myself by trying to be like them? That's what I think other people are trying to do. They're just showing their fandom.
So everybody approaches it from their own perspective.
Yeah.
I think that makes sense. I think that it seems like all the things that everybody does, there's the language, there's the people who do the, they dress up, there's the people who represent Avatar at the cons and stuff like that. I mean, everything like that can be kind of your own personal Na'vi-ish thing that you would want to do.
Mm-hmm. I love how it inspires everybody to be creative in different ways. That's the fun part of being part of a fandom, right?
Yeah. You have the people who go into the forums and have entire threads just devoted to role-playing, acting like Na'vi, writing stories about fictional characters, and being creative in that way.
Yeah, we were exposed to this world that we love so much that we're doing all we can to create more of it and to keep it going in our hearts and minds. I think that's what it means to be a Na'vi.
Yeah, I think you can point. It inspires us.
Yeah, I went to Beta Breakers because I live in San Francisco this year, and there were a bunch of avatars running around, and there was this one girl in particular that was amazing. Like, her makeup was just incredible. So I went up to her and I was like, "Kelt eh wangati kame," and she was like, and I was like, I couldn't believe that she was like, because you know, if coming from a learnnavi.org bias, we think that we're the center of the fandom universe because we've got people on we've got sub boards talking about makeup and stuff. But no, of course not. There's tons of boards. So yeah, it was just so funny because I was, I told her about the site and I hope she comes and
that's a good point.
And learns to say hello and that kind of thing. And I always want to meet more.
Yeah.
And then we can pick up like how different people interact, converse with, engage their fandom.
We don't really even think about other people in the fandom. We think we're in our own little microcosm doing our own thing, and then we meet other people who like the same things as we are, and they're like a little bit different, and it's like,
on a different focus.
Hi. Yeah. I didn't know you existed.
Yeah.
Because we all found our place together at learnnavi.org, and then I go over to Facebook, and
there's a whole community.
500 friends on Facebook, and it's a huge avatar.
Join us
community.
And talk to us. I want to hear from all of you, listeners.
Totally. Some people just sit there and type in Na'vi all day, like they've been speaking it since birth, and other people are... You know, they make little jokes and they do their little love triangles, but it's all kinds of cool. But again, it's just everybody approaching it differently.
You make it your own.
And there's the other Avatar forums.
I think a lot of what we agree on is the creativity part of being Na'vi. The movie has really inspired a lot of people to be creative. People were drawing pictures, people were creating stories, people were painting themselves blue and calling themselves avatars and Na'vi. I know a bunch of people like that. And it's really neat to see all this creativity, and I hope really deeply that this doesn't go unnoticed. I know that some of our Learn Na'vi people got to be on national TV because of it.
Yeah, my book that I wrote got put on TV. I'm excited about that.
Good Morning America.
Our members at Good Morning America, right?
All right, yeah.
It was like a 2-second shot, but it was like, hey, look, it's the Learn Na'vi the Easy Way by Kalti Palalukan. <What not? laughs> That was fun.
It's awesome. Yay!
Okay, I'm trying to find Tyria. Oh, go ahead.
I don't want to sound like we're, tooting our own horn here, but an example of creativity. We're here. We're talking. We're trying to make people laugh, and even if we're failing at that, it's still fun for us.
Yeah, we're doing our own thing here.
I've never gotten involved in anything like this before, so this is all very exciting for me.
Yeah, that is funny. I never joined a Star Wars forum or fan club or anything like that.
Yeah.
So speaking of which. One of our favorite people, Tyria, over at Learn Na'vi, was nice enough to allow us to use her professionally shot model images for our cover.
Wow.
So we want to give her
really
a little love.
These are really beautiful. These are like, oh my God, incredible.
You can find her at myspace.com/jb.art. And also I'll put up her other links at blog.radioavatar.com.
These portraits are truly amazing. You guys should all go check them out. They're incredible.
Yeah, you can find them in Learn Na'vi, too. There's, at least 15 different pictures of her in trees with a bow, with a spear.
It looks straight out of the movie, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like Neytiri's younger sister.
It looks like we just went to Pandora and hid in some bush and just snapping pictures of some random Na'vi.
Stalker style.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, I took this with my cell phone camera.
Except better.
Yeah, I think this was done in Argentina. And no, she's not naked.
They're so incredible.
Yeah, really, really well done. I mean, look, the detail, right down to the stripes and the color of the blue.
And the little bioluminescent markings. How did she do
that? We need to get her on for a tutorial. She's got a...
Yeah, give her mad props.
Bioluminescent markings all the way down her side and not just on her face.
So, unofficial announcement. We may have a makeup session next time.
We are definitely, as we get closer to Halloween, we are definitely going to be pulling in some makeup experts to help us help you come up with a cool avatar costume on the cheap. No need to spend lots and lots of money. We're going to help you find out how to do it without blowing your budget. But these are just amazing pictures, and we love her to death.
They're so beautiful.
They were really well done. She's a pretty girl, but also...
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Tyria Palawan.
And one more time, myspace.com/Tyria.
I'm saying it wrong. Oh, my pronunciation. Yeah. myspace.com/JB.art.
Mm-hmm.
JB.art.
And again, we will put her other links up at blog.radioavatar.com, so it's just easy to find. Cool.
So, all right. Thank you, James Cameron, for making such a nice movie to bring out the creativity in all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's another thing.
Yes.
It really does
Yay!
Inspire.
Insert applause
again,
here.
Yeah. golf clap. So, and that's the beauty of it. We all find our own different ways of expressing it. So what does it mean to be Na'vi? I mean, I guess maybe there's not so much an answer as much as it's really an inspiration.
It's a creative spark. It's a motivation to become something that you're not, but not necessarily, but something better.
Maybe it's accessing the divinity within us, because the creative spark...
That's deep.
It really is.
Ooh.
Thank you. It's kind of what I do on my good days. Don't see me on my bad day. Okay, I'm going to end it now before I say something stupid and blow.
This week on Everybody Loves Awa, Ralu offers Ansett a banana fruit, which she pretends to accept.
Yum, yum. Just kidding, I could not possibly accept it until you enjoyed it first.
Truly, the joke is on her, as it is really a banana cream pie, which ends up all over her face. Join the hilarity when our favorite Saltute Uncle Max shows up unannounced to dinner and gets chased around the fire pit by a non-tom.
Ah, don't eat me. I taste like chicken.
Oh, the fun you'll have at home, Tree. Check your local satellite channel for showtimes.
My name is James G, or Jimmy G, however you'd like to refer to me. I'll probably be called Jimmy most of the time on the podcast. But I am 17 years old, and I live in the grand and glorious state of Ohio. Yay! I have a huge love of languages, and when I found out that Avatar, unexpectedly one of my favorite movies of all time, had a language to go with it, I was ecstatic. So after doing a bit of research on the language and learning a bit, I stumbled across the podcast, and that's why you have to listen to my voice. Sorry about that. So I hope that you guys enjoy the podcast and have as much fun listening to it as we do making it. So ke avame ulte wangahu matsmuktu.
So this is our ASG segment. I apologize in advance, but we had some technical difficulties and had to record it twice. So you may notice a couple of hiccups. Please forgive us, but we want to get this out so we can move on to the next episode. All right, so let's talk about the Avatar Activist Survival Guide. If you're looking for it on Amazon, it is officially Avatar, a confidential report of the biological, on the biological and socio history of Pandora. I don't care about any of that. We call it the ASG. And if you have seen Avatar and you have not gotten yourself a copy of the ASG, you really need to. It has so much backstory about Pandora, and it's really fun. It helps you relive the magic of the movie.
It's not only backstory about Pandora, it's a lot of informations on Earth, and all we get in the film is that, well, you grow up hearing about Pandora and it's all nice and wonderful, and somewhere in the end Jake says, our world is gray and dead and no green. And when you have the ASG, you really see that Earth is a pretty messed up place.
They have a lot of pictures trying to show how messed up the world is, how, you know, you can't even see the sky. It's all screens, all of it. And they...
Yeah, even before you get to page one, on page XVII, it shows you they sold the sky. They built, what is that, like an eight-story ceiling, and it's just 24 hours a day of advertisement. And so you don't have sky anymore. You just have, it's so weird because you can't escape advertisement. It's everywhere. You're always being programmed.
I love how, like, on the contents page, there's an ad for Simusex. Like, everything's gone. There are no morals. Screw it all out. Just go out and this is all you got now.
Yeah, instant pleasure. Forget the fact that you're walking around wearing a gas mask or surrounded by advertisements and everybody's paranoid. And on the other page is a looks like an 80-foot tall video screen ceiling of a girl in a giant girl in a bikini. It's like, you know, pay no attention to the fact that you're eating RDA corporate food mush. Here's a girl in a bikini. What was the word that James Cameron used? What a dystopian future. That's really cool.
Very Matrix-like.
And then you go to Pandora, and it's all like trees and butterflies and, you know, pretty sunsets.
Viper wolves.
And viper wolves.
I love the picture of the Sturm Beast, like on the Hunt Songs page, where, like, you have these avatars, or not these avatars, these Na'vi, and they're so little. Like, there's three of them just sitting on the Sturm Beast, and it's like, oh, they look little, but then you're like, those are 10 feet tall, like. Those people are 10 feet tall. That beast is huge.
Oh, yeah, where they're skinning them to prepare them for food. That thing is, yeah, it's monstrous.
They definitely give you a good sense of scale and how things compare to each other in the book, because, I mean, they got, you know, everything you see in the movie plus a whole lot more.
Yeah, lots of extra.
And for those that still need more sense of scale, there is a small picture somewhere, I'm unable to find it right now, that shows several items from the film, like the giant wheel truck, an avatar, a storm beast.
Yeah, on page 179.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's in the
cool.
RDA section. Oh, speaking of RDA section, it shows all of the weapons that they have. They don't really show you in the movie. Like, the colonel uses that Gau 90 30mm cannon that the Thanator knocks out of his hands. And the amp suit knife that he uses is just huge.
Speaking about the amp suit, I mean, everybody turn to page 10. I mean, turn to page 10 real quick. This is pretty cool right here. This is really awesome. It's got the amp suit. And then if you look on the left-hand side of the page, kind of going along the left-hand side of the page, all that stuff written in Sharpie right there, do you see that? Oh, wait, you don't, because your book's not signed like mine is.
Wow.
It's signed by Ty Rubin, my main man, the guy that designed all the vehicles in Avatar.
This is really cool. I like the way this book is kind of just a loose bound format encyclopedia, and it's total contraband. I think even on the front it says a confidential report, and at the beginning it says, this is if you're caught with this,
anyone found in possession of this document faces imprisonment or more extreme punishment,
like being sent to Pandora to work in the giant pit,
death by Siamese sex.
Oh.
But it really opens up. It has a whole bunch of information on the Na'vi, and I like page 32 with the little Na'vi kids. That always makes me smile.
Yeah, me too. I was going to say that too.
We have Eskimo Na'vi, and we wouldn't know about that except for the ASG, because it says that not only does Pandora have subarctic regions, but that we have Na'vi in subarctic regions. So that's really crazy. You know, and Na'vi are found all over the planet, on islands, in the forest, obviously.
I love all the discussion about the plants. Like, the plants on Pandora are crazy, and you don't even really get a good grasp of that. Like, oh yeah, they glow, but really, reading the book, you really learn how awesome the plants from Pandora are.
I don't think it's awesome if a plant starts shooting thorns at you.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes, you do.
It's cool.
Of course you do. I mean, well, you know, it's a matter of, like, once you're there. And the evil space fish. I forgot what page he's on. But the evil space fish has to be one of my favorite entries. And also it shows how RDA corporate executives are...
exploiting Pandora for their own joy?
Smuggling. Well, the RDA corporate executives are smuggling in various species and plants. Because the RDA has an exclusive contract for anything off planet, anything outside of the solar system, they own and have rights to. So anything from Pandora, they just bring back, including the evil space fish, which it says you have to have a very large aquarium because they like to slam up against the wall. So I guess the moral of the story is, this ASG or Activist Survival Guide is a really fun book.
And it helps us pretend, I mean, we can talk about this world as if it really exists. I mean, if you notice in this entire conversation, we were like, yeah, and the sky turned into a huge advertising mall. We didn't say as if, or, you know, like we're talking about these things as, yeah, it's anything to make it more real for us, which it's awesome.
Like all the
to be part
Star
of this
Wars,
world.
Background history and expanded universe books put together and condensed into one little book that doesn't need that much space on your bookshelf.
Yeah.
And is much better to look at.
All right, so that's it. Run out, buy your own copy, and then come and tell us.
I pledge allegiance to James Cameron, greatest movie director ever. into the films such as Avatar and Terminator 2 and that Titanic movie that I'm never gonna see because it's like a total chick flick.
Hey, what's all this then? Stop this, stop this, stop this. This is sacrilege. This is treasonous. You can't just butcher the Pledge of Allegiance to suit your needs.
Well, is it sacrilege or is it treasonous? Because it can't be both. Well, I thought treason was something you did against the country.
Well, sacrilege is something you do against God.
Isn't that blasphemy?
Well, is it sacrilege or is it blasphemy?
Or treasonous? Hey, who asked you anyway? You're the cause of all this mess.
Well, actually, it was James Cameron who started it all. He's the one who made all of those movies.
Right! We'll stop by arresting James Cameron for making films that go against God. And country. Shut up, you.
Our main scene discussion tonight is the first meeting of Jake and Neytiri. Now, this scene is loaded with subtleties and inferences that are very easy to miss. Overall, the scene is pretty straightforward. Boy meets girl during fight with doggies. Boy chases girl. Girl shoves boy. Boy wins girl after sparklies land on boy, lighting him up like a Christmas tree. Nothing we haven't seen 1,000 times before in every movie in existence. But what I want to examine is how James Cameron showed us that Awa was interested in Jake from that point forward, and why. This scene shows us just how attentive Awa can be, even though she's a global presence and got an entire planet to look out for. So even when you think she's preoccupied with something else, Mom may be doing 15 things at once, but she can still throw a shoe at you. So, at this point of the story, Awa may have sent Mr. Thanator after Jake for stomping around noisily and slapping her plants, or Mr. Thanator may have shown up on his own, but his escape from the cat and his subsequent transition from curious visitor to instinctual warrior in the jungle was a real eye-opening moment, and I think that speaks volumes that it's just so easy to miss.
By the way, isn't that Palulu Can one of your cousins, KP?
Yeah, they're of the we don't bother to dress up clan. They're you know, I'm of the more elitist, nice, you know, pink bow and everything.
Okay.
Suck it, Hello Kitty.
What I realized there is imagine you're on a science team and off with your colleagues, and suddenly you get separated from them by a large, really angry cat. And the first thing we see Jake do after he jumped off the cliff, well, which sane person would do that? Okay, well, with an angry big cat on your heels, you might consider that worth. But the first thing we see Jake do after swimming through the river is he sits there and makes a spare. And
he's all shivering.
Which scientist would do that?
And, like, scared, too. You can see all his senses on full alert.
Yeah. Right, right. Now, a normal scientist would go, well, I'm going to build a fire or a radio or climb a tree. You know, in other words, he would try to separate himself.
Yeah, you wouldn't go, and your first priority wouldn't be to sit there and make yourself a spare. You would try to get help. But not a weapon.
Now, you know, James Cameron makes that look easy, but if you've ever had to pull a branch down from a tree and using a knife, not a saw, and then start hacking
it's
away and sharpening
hard
it down,
work.
Good luck with that. That took him at least an hour to do that.
Yeah, and we don't even know what the trees are made of. Like if there's naturally occurring carbon fiber in the bones.
Well, like... I think it's wood.
Anyway, it's a good thing he found a spear.
It must be like sawing through a rock, then.
Yeah. I know, exactly. It's a good thing he found some...
Picture, if you will, anyway. Taking a butter knife and trying to cut through your granite kitchen counter. There you go.
Now, granted, what he probably had was softwood, by the way he was shaving it off. But even so, that's saying that he was lucky enough to find that branch. Who knows how long it took. But it goes back to Peter's point. A normal, rational scientist would go,
yeah.
Oh, well, I better radio into camp or make myself safe, maybe climb a tree so that I can stay away from, you know, whatever's going to try to eat me, and maybe wave at a helicopter or build a signal fire.
Well, and you do
Jake
see the
didn't bother to build a fire
you do see the scientists, and they say that, no, he's dead. Forget it. He's not coming home.
Mm-hmm.
That's how the scientists see.
Yeah, nice of them to give up so easily.
Right. They're like, nope, he's dead. We'll see him when he wakes up after his avatar dies. But he makes it. He makes a spear.
Well, see, now this is the point where Awa says, this one is different. This one is special.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
Yes.
I mean, this is literally what Eitukan says later.
Do you think that's when she takes notice?
Yeah, I think this is really, because she sent a cat after him, or Mr. Thanator showed it up, and just, the point was Jake was just supposed to die. Go away, you know?
Maybe, so yeah, he started proving himself even earlier, too, when he stood his ground against Mr. Hammer Flower Nose Guy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's
a very good point. I totally missed that. That was a very instinctual thing to do.
So he's this cocky motherfucker.
I can imagine.
Sorry. he's all cocky, and he's like, yeah, yeah. And A was like, well, okay.
Yeah, bring your friends. Come back home to mommy.
And A was like, all right, I will. And then out comes the Palulukan.
That's funny because that's probably the first time anything other than like a Palulukan has stood up to Mr. Hammerhead guy.
Titanothere?
Imagine you're just... yeah, thank you, Titanothere. You're this big Titanothere and this skinny little Navi-looking thing runs up and starts shouting at you. It probably was like, what? This guy's crazy. I'm going away.
Well, yeah, you don't want to end up with a crazy guy on your feet.
Totally. So at the beginning of this particular scene, though, again, mistake number one, Neytiri's like, I'm going to shoot this guy, and that'll be the end of the movie. And Awa sends a little sparkly thing down and says, you know, I'm going to land on you.
Oh, the Atokarina.
Atokarina.
Atokarina. Navi lesson time. Atokarina. How to mispronounce Navi.
I bet you did notice that when Neytiri wants to shoot Jake, there's just one Atokarina coming down and sitting on the tip of her arrow, but that was just a little, no, wait a moment. But when Jake is on the tree branch with Neytiri and Neytiri says, no, go away, there's a whole swarm of them, and I think that might be considered not only a little no wait, that's more like a, hey, are you stupid? Take him with you.
That's really funny.
Exactly. Well, it's very subtle in the movie, but if you listen closely, you'll hear him say, hey, so why don't you teach me? And she's like, go away. And he's like, no, no, I really want to go. And she stops and says, go away. And he says, no. And that moment goes by really quick. But I think at that moment, he, in his defiance, that was such a strong psychic or emotional statement that says, I am here. I want to learn. And I think Awa really took notice and said, hey, this is what I want in a Navi.
I thought it was interesting when he was fighting the Viper Wolves. You'll notice he doesn't actually attack any of them. He waits for them to attack. And then if they attack him, that's when he strikes back. So he was kind of reluctant to start a fight with them. He didn't want to hurt them, but he was prepared to if he had to.
He was trying to provoke them, though. He was like, okay, I don't have all night. If you're going to attack me, attack me. But otherwise, go away and don't waste my time.
I thought that was because he realized, oh, these things aren't leaving. Because he stood there for a little bit, and then it goes into the slow-mo, and he looks at them and sees what they have, like, you know, their hands. And he's like, all right, this...
All right, so this is the first real Navi we see, right? Neytiri here? And I love the visual of her. Like, she is so close to that tree. Like, she is a part of that tree. Jake has no idea she's there. And she's not little, not by any stretch of the imagination. and she is perfectly camouflaged and hidden. And it's, like, such a huge statement of how the Navi are with their world.
She just blends right in, even though she's bright blue against
green.
The
movie makers did a really good job with that whole sequence. Like, starting from, oh, I want to be Jake, because you're watching him do all these adventures. To the seamless, like, the camera pans over these tiny critters, like, on the trees. And then the camera keeps panning, and then it pans over Neytiri. So, like, goes from, like, little critter on the tree, and then to Neytiri, and then to the dusk falling for the first time. Like, that transition is really beautiful. I think that the filmmakers did a good job with that.
Yeah. No, well, you brought up another good point that I totally didn't get till right now. At the beginning of the movie, it's like, wow, this is so cool. I want to be Jake. I want to be Jake. Because here he has a body, and he's going around stomping around in the forest, and he's blue, and he's 10 feet tall, and he's having a good time. And as soon as we think, isn't this guy cool? Then we see Neytiri. We're like, oh, this guy's a total dweeb. She is the coolest. She melts into the tree, and you know, she comes around and goes thwap and thwap, and he takes out, I think, 4 or 5 of the dogs, and she takes out, like, 7 of them and then chases the rest of them away. She's just...
Does he actually kill any of them?
I think he kind of bonks them.
Well, they all walked away, because the one who got stabbed with the spear took off with the spear.
Oh.
All of the ones he attacked at least walked away from him.
Oh, okay.
The ones Neytiri attacked died.
Well, it just goes to show you don't mess with Neytiri.
When you don't know how to kill an Antang, you better don't try, because they're going to take your spear and then your knife. And
yeah, yeah. You know, another point about Jake just immersing himself into Pandora, it seems a very human or even almost adolescent thing to do. When he's following Neytiri.
He's slapping the flowers. Yeah, I really like that.
he's just slapping the flowers. He's going, oh, look, it all lights up. Slap, slap, slap. And it's a comic moment, but at the same time, it really shows his open-minded wonder, his just full-on acceptance of this place.
Oh, it was funny that of all the Na'vi that he could have run into, he runs into probably one of the most important person that would be out in the forest, Neytiri, the daughter of the chief. So it seems kind of like that may have been guided as well by Ewa. Mm-hmm.
So in theory, rather than Tsute coming around, Ewa might have been going, hey, why don't you, because that's, okay, kiddies, it's lesson time. As a professional psychic, I can tell you this, flashes don't just come to you and go, you know, here's what's going to happen. Here's, you know, who's going to win the lottery, or here's the magic number. You get these subtle impulses that are very hard to distinguish from your normal thoughts. It's like, wouldn't it be a good idea to go this way? And you think, oh yeah, that's a good idea, not realizing you're being led along by the nose. The universe reaches out to you, and or you could say the gods are God, or however you want to phrase it, but the universe is trying to help you.
Whatever deity you want to plug in there.
Exactly. However you want to describe to it. Or even as an atheist, you could say, well, it seems like, you know, whatever, electrobiochemicals. The universe moves you, and you can choose to listen or not. Now, not only do the Na'vi listen, but hopefully Neytiri is training to sharpen her ears. So of all people, she of all people would be most malleable or most easily pushed around by Ewa to go, well, as long as you're on patrol, why don't you go patrol this sector? And poof, here's your reward. Here's somebody you can, you know, meet up with.
And when she's stalking Jake on the tree, she's like, oh, this guy is totally going to meet my arrow. He doesn't need to be in this forest.
You can see the mistrust in her eyes when she's aiming.
Draw back.
And the self-satisfaction, like, oh, I'm going to get you good.
Yeah, she draws back the arrow, and then it was like, whoa, hey, whoa, hold on a minute. Cool it. Just watch for a while, okay?
I like this.
A little after that, there's a thing I never really thought about, but it happened. Well, we see Jake making his spear, then we see Neytiri following Jake, and one of the next moments, uh-huh, we see Jake trying to light up a torch. Mm-hmm. Well, how did he know that this whatever fluid it is was flammable?
Yeah.
Did he run around with his box of matches and try to set everything on fire?
Yeah, it's like, okay, I'm going to wrap my shirt around this pole and then dip it in this goo that I have no idea what it does and light it on fire and see what happens.
It was magic.
Yeah.
It's maybe
magic.
He had an impulse in his mind.
That's a good
Na'vi instinct.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
There you go.
Wouldn't that be cool if Ewa was moving him as well as Neytiri together? Now, this is stuff only James Cameron knows, but you know,
I really like how much we've said about.
We're just
going
to have to corner him and ask him.
I like what you said about that, though, like the impulses. Because in a way, because everybody says listen to your heart, right? So, like, in a way, that Atokirina is like a physical manifestation of any doubt Neytiri might have had already, or any curiosity that she might have had.
Oh, yeah.
And there it is. You can see it.
Avatar is a visual story.
Yeah, very visual.
Everything has to be told visually.
So very.
A lot of the, well, a lot of the concepts are hidden in the visuals. I mean, we see a tree and we go, oh, yeah, it's a tree. No, no, that's home tree. That's where they live. You know, you could say, well, they live in a tree. But
it's so important.
Yeah, there's so many. So I think part of the problem with Avatar is the fact that a lot of the clues are right there in front of you, but it's so pretty and so easy to just sit
enjoy
back
the
and
scenery,
mindlessly
right.
watch
but
the.
But you gotta be paying attention.
Yeah, you watch the movie and you miss it.
Especially for those who watched it in 3D the first time, it's like for me, it was my first time seeing any 3D movie, and so it was like, oh wow, that's pretty cool. Oh wow, there's something else shiny. Oh, ADHD, cool.
Did that fly just fly past my head?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, oh, there's ash falling, and it looks like it's right in front of my face. And, oh, yeah, that's from the tree burning.
Oh, yeah, there's a story here.
What, I can't touch?
I like that. remember that Ewa is not merely, like I said just a couple minutes ago, like an invisible hand in the sky, but the combined, like, thoughts, processes, and life force of all living things. So it's like, it's their internet. And so it's, what she is the sum of all of the parts of the things on the world, on the moon. I was going somewhere with this.
Well, yeah, it's like she's an interactive global
right.
consciousness.
So she cannot exist without the things that are living there. And she cannot do anything without the things that are living there doing the things themselves and having the feelings and the doubts and the ideas.
Right. So let's say that if Grace was right, that these neural connections among the roots of the trees and blah, 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 were neural connections, then yes, those trees would represent her brain power or her sensory organs. And wherever you have trees, you got to have animals. And so the animals feed off the trees and the trees they feed off animal poop and stuff because it becomes soil.
It's the circle of life.
Yeah. I think that the take-home point of this whole discussion is that this whole scene shows us that either A, this is one incredibly long, extremely coincidental series of events, or that everything is connected in some sort of way that just makes sense. It's like, okay, is it impressions on the people? Is it nature guiding them? But there's definitely some guiding force there.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a safe assumption, being that we're just speculating.
Ni trumpt en kremanga. Ni trumpt en kremanga. Ni trumpt en krema. Kaltu paladukan. Ni trumpt en kremanga.
Back in January, I wrote the first book on the Na'vi language. It was completely unofficial, of course, a piece of fan nonfiction. Using the dictionary compiled by LearnNavi.org moderator Teran Yu, I created a fun activity book called Learn Na'vi the Easy Way, filling it with games and puzzles and word challenges. I wanted to offer a break from the routine of endless repetition and brute force memorization of words. Now, back then, we only had 500 words to work with, so it was a bit challenging to organize them into categories and make interesting puzzles. But Learn Na'vi moderator Skaun was generous enough to allow me to use his grammar worksheets in the book, and at the time we had very few hard, fast rules on how words impacted each other. It was a very Wild West time of development. You guys remember that, way back when we only used to have a handful of words, and everybody kept saying the same words over and over.
Yeah, it was...
Actually, that's a little bit before my time.
That book, actually, is kind of what started me on the whole learning Navi thing. I mean, I was looking for tools when I first discovered that there's an Avatar language. So I went and found the book, printed it off, and it was super-duper helpful.
Oh,
actually,
yay.
I need to go back through that, because it's definitely helpful for all of the shorter words.
Yeah, it focuses primarily on building up a starting vocabulary and being able to spot and recognize short words. In my twisted logic, this makes it easier to decipher long sentences of foreign text, but I didn't want to confuse the beginning student with heavy grammatical uses and complex terminology like infixes or how grammatical rules completely rearrange the letters of any given word in Navi. The whole idea was just keep it fun and light so that the student would be able to keep their interest level high during those first few weeks of learning this new language.
See, I thought the way it was written was really, really good because it's a workbook, but it's written in kind of a children's sort of workbook. But that's the good part because, you know, I mean, if you don't know anything about Navi whatsoever, it's a great jumping off point.
Yeah.
The one thing I liked a lot about it when I first came in was the really cool picture on the front. That's actually what got me. But then when I went and printed it out, and then my sister found it, she was like, nerd. Like, no, I'm not. But the coolest thing about that is when I was working on the Tree of Voices lessons, I actually went straight to the workbook and pulled almost all of the vocabulary from there to make those Tree of Voices lessons. That's why if you look at the majority of the Tree of Voices lessons that are out right now, they're based off that Navi workbook that was created just because of not only the simplicity of it, but it was a good resource for the collection of the words that was needed at the time.
Well, thank you. And definitely, I want to make sure we cover the Tree of Voices later on in this podcast. It may end up actually coming first, but definitely. Now, I wanted to say that we were very fortunate when Learn Navi member 8 allowed us to use his Navi rhyming dictionary. This is something that most people will never see, and it's too bad. This rhyming dictionary is a godsend in making puzzles, and to date, no other attempt has been made at a rhyming dictionary. But I think it's just sheer genius, because it does more than help you write songs or poetry or make puzzles. It helps you see how Navi words end, focusing on the ending sounds in letter clusters, where normally when you're learning words, you'll naturally gravitate to the beginning of how a word begins. And looking at it this way, really, it just helps cement the sounds and syllable formations. Now, I do have to warn everybody, the Learn Navi the Easy Way is a bit out of date now, now that the language has tripled in size. But it's still fun. It can help you get started quickly, especially if you use it in conjunction with that Tree of Voices software. Which, what I like about the Tree of Voices software is that it helps you attach images and sounds to the printed word. Because before you guys did that, all we had was a forum. All we had was a printed word. And then at some point, Ian and someone else put together the audio samples of the words, which I believe you used those for the Tree of Voices.
We actually recorded ours originally.
Oh, you recorded your own. Cool.
Yeah.
Even
but
better.
Like you said, it does help attach images and sounds to the word. And that's also one of the reasons why we pulled it specifically from the Navi workbook, is because it already did that for us. And all we had to do was just take the samples that were there and help everybody learn Navi the way they learn their first language.
Yeah. The point is that it's supposed to be fun. Yeah, of course there's going to be memorization. Yeah, there's going to be stress. But between the puzzles and the games and the visuals that you get with the Tree of Voices, use these two together. Learn Navi the Easy Way. You can go to learnnavi.org. scroll down a bit and find, it's right there on the front page, Learn Na'vi the Easy Way workbook. If you can't find it there, go to blog.radioavatar.com. I'll put up a link for it. Just realize that I'm currently working on writing new books for my The Easiest Way Ever series and a new card deck, so I just don't have time to go back and update the Learn Na'vi the Easy Way workbook or write out a sequel. If somebody wants to take up the torch and create fun new workbooks for students, great. But from this point forward, as far as printed matter, unless Fox puts out something, I'm thinking it'll probably be just the Tree of Voices software will get updated. So that's the workbook, and if you get yourself a copy, like I said, it's free. You'll have a good time with it.
Radio Avatar.
Well, that was fun. I hope you enjoyed the show. We certainly did making it. And before you go, we want to clear up a couple of things. We want to let you know that this is entirely a fan-created podcast, and it has no affiliation with James Cameron's Avatar, Lightstorm, Fox, or LearnNotV.org. However, if you want to find other podcasts we've done, head over to RadioAvatar.com and check us out there. Or you can go to LearnNotV.org in the forums, or on Twitter, or on Facebook, and leave us a comment. Let us know how we're doing, what you enjoyed, what you think we could do better, your favorite brand of muffin, whatever. Just feel free to head over there and chat with us. And we hope to see you soon. Check back often for more podcasts. And I guess that's it. I'll wrap this up then by saying Kiyavame, which is see you soon.
If you love Avatar and want to be part of a team project, why not consider joining our cast and crew? We are always looking for bright new talent, so simply write us at podcast@radioavatar.com or radioavatar@gmx.net. Tell us you would like to be a member of our team. Tell us what you like most about Avatar and how to reach you by email. We'll get back at you as soon as possible.
So does anybody here, since Ian left, does anybody here actually speak Na'vi?
I'm still
Ian,
here.
Teach us some Na'vi so that we don't get yelled at.
So painful, so funny.
By the way, we're very bad, bad people. We have not yet mentioned our...
Oh, my God, we're horrible.
LearnNavi.org. Sebastian is going to... Oh, ping. It was nice to be a mod. We're probably banning.
Oh, God. No, no, no. We'll record something before, and that will be our intro.
Avatar is... I'm just going to say it. Avatar is the new Star Wars. Screw it.
Completely.
Avatar is the
Star
Wars of this generation. It's got, you don't have the Force, you have Ewa. You don't have, but I want to go to the Tashi station and you can play with your friends later. You don't have a little whiny protagonist. You have a very cool Jake Sully. I mean,
it's everything Star Wars should have been. Yeah. And I love the original.
And it has real foreign languages instead of a dog.
Yeah.
I tell today, I speak English. I come here from far away and I chop down a tree. Welluvertep, I killed my mommy. And now I live on Pandora and I attack Na'vi.
Hey, we now have chapters in our podcast. Those are those little black lines that you see in the green bar. So now you can easily rewind or fast forward to skip entire segments if you want to get to a specific discussion or commercial. Episodes 1 and 2 have not been retrofitted yet, but all future episodes will have chapters as well, for your listening pleasure. Special thanks this episode to Tidea, the world's first cover Na'vi. Thanks to everyone in the cast for re-recording everything when it sounded like crap the first time. Would it be ostentatious for us to thank our second and third thousand listeners? Well, color me purple or some other lame-ass pseudo-cliché. Thank you for listening. We have a nice map of what general area you are downloading our show from, and we love you so much that we want to throw you all a big party and invite you. If and when we ever get the chance, we will of course ask you to cover your own travel expenses. If anyone is listening, a deep, heartfelt thanks from all of us to James Cameron, John Landau, and their gang for making Avatar. Apologies, as always, to our beleaguered Professor Frommer for our senseless yet entertaining butchering of the Na'vi language. Apologies to everyone we spoofed and parodied in this episode, but we wouldn't do it if we didn't love you. Thanks to Old Time Radio, Freesound.org, and one last time, Thank you, Steve Irwin. You are my personal hero. I hope there are crocodiles in heaven.